Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Being Yourself podcast. All right. Hello, and again, welcome to the Being Yourself podcast. I am your host, Andres Cintrón, and I am very, very excited for today's episode. Because of the topic that we will be discussing, I find it is so important. And to help me with today's episode is a person I've gotten to know over the past year and a half. We've been working together, and this person has been so devoted to their work, to being of support to others, specifically the LGBTQ plus community. So, Caitlin, welcome to the Being Yourself podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I am also so excited for this conversation.
Yeah, no, thank you. Thank you so much for agreeing and being a part of it. I think it's going to be a great conversation that we're going to have today. And I hope that the listeners out there get something out of it, and hopefully they can relay and take, you know, some new information if they never knew or this is new for them.
Yeah, definitely.
So before, you know, we get into the topics and so on, I know, you know, over the past year and a half that we've gotten to know each other.
Quite well.
And I know you are a coffee fanatic.
I am, yes.
I know we get coffee pretty often.
Yep.
Do you have a specific coffee routine, or is it just kind of like whatever works for you?
I have a pretty specific coffee routine. For someone who loves coffee, I drink Dunkin' Donuts, and I know it's basically just like watered. It's basically water next to like a bean truck. Mm-hmm. But I get it every morning. I drink a medium iced coffee with caramel. I get it every single morning without doubt. If I don't get it, it's a bad day. But it keeps me going. It keeps me running. So
I feel that. I mean, if I don't have my coffee in the morning, it's like the day does not, I don't feel as productive. I don't feel the same.
Right.
I feel that. Awesome. You know, hopefully one day we'll be doing these over actual coffee, but it's okay. You know, we're chugging along through this, this pandemic that we're facing and so on. So
staying safe, which is good, which is important.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we continue having these conversations.
Absolutely, which is, you know, what's the important thing here. So, you know, I know that when we decided to do this episode and we talked a little bit about what did we want to talk about, right? And you know, I know that you've done so much work with the LGBTQ plus family and community, which we both belong to, correct? Am I correct on that one? Mm-hmm. And I think this is going to be a topic that we can definitely relate with. And I hope that others do and learn something from this topic that we're going to be discussing today. But before we even get into that, you know, I kind of want to give you some time to talk about yourself. You know, this is a podcast that we talk about identities, and I want to give you that opportunity. Mm-hmm. and your relationship. What has been your relationship with your identities? You know, so talk to us a little bit about yourself. You know, and
yeah, definitely. My name's Caitlin Bartley. I work very closely with you, Andres. I'm white. I am cisgender. I am bisexual. I am a woman. I identify as fat, which is a newer identity for me, which I have been taking on, which has been very exciting to start that journey. I grew up lower middle class. I'm a first generation college student. I'm also the first person in my family to get a master's degree, which I believe is also the same for you, Andres, right?
Yes.
I'm currently an educator working in Res Life and working in higher ed, and I'm really excited to see where that future brings me. But I've really been focusing a lot more on my different identities and seeing how they intersect and how does being bi impact my being fat, and how does my being white impact my being bi and all of these other identities. More recently, I've been focusing a lot more on being fat, which is something that I feel like for a long time, people haven't been able to say with a smile on their face or been able to say and feel proud of. So that's been something I've been working on most recently about my identity that I'm pretty happy about.
Wow. I mean, thank you for sharing. I mean, you know, one of the things that I knew about this, you know, coming along to this podcast or creating this is that I wanted it to also be vulnerable, right? So I do appreciate the vulnerability that you know, you're showing and expressing, right? I think people definitely need to hear these conversations and how others are experiencing themselves and coming to terms with who they are. You know, what has that journey been for you? I know that, you know, this new, I want to say newfound identity, but, and maybe correct me if I'm wrong, right? It's this identity of you that you're recognizing, you're coming to terms with and accepting, right? You know, how did that come along, right? Because I think we all have our certain identities that, in one way or another, either it hits us, right, and impacts, and we're like, oh, this is me, or we start to kind of develop and learn about as we experience life, right?
Yeah. I would say my fatness is something that I haven't always had, but since I've had it, it has been like a very forefront identity, but not necessarily in a positive way. I relate very strongly to being a woman and like questioning my own gender and being bi. And that's something that I can look at and say, I am proud of this. But for most of my life, I wasn't proud of being fat. Growing up, like my mother was in Weight Watchers and doing diets all the time and kind of instilling that into my brain and teaching me that I should be striving to be thinner, and therefore more beautiful or more accepted by society. And I recently started listening to a podcast by one of my favorite artists, Mary Lambert, who has taken on her fatness and has really said, like, I am fat and I love my body. And I've been listening to the way that she talks about her own body, and I've been working to start to talk about my own body that way. And I think the first step for me was being able to say, like, yeah, I am fat and that's fine. Like, it's just another descriptor, like being tall or like being brown haired, that I can really just say and accept and really not need to worry about what am I doing to lose weight? What am I doing to become more accepted by society standards? I know for a long time, like when I was 12, my mom put me in Weight Watchers. So wow. I was in middle school attending Weight Watchers every weekend, watching what I was eating, counting the calories, counting the protein, and it wasn't healthy. Even though I was losing weight, it wasn't healthy for any 12-year-old to be surrounded by middle-aged women who were all hated their bodies. So since graduating from my master's degree, I've been really focusing on what makes me happy and what makes me feel good about myself and really focusing on that in terms of food and eating. So do I feel good after eating this? Yeah. Okay. Let's keep eating it then. That kind of thing.
Wow.
It's been very interesting.
You know, I mean, one of the things that I'm already loving so far is that, you know, I know that I started this podcast saying about how we've known each other for about a year and a half now, but you know, this is the power of coming together in conversation, because getting to know each other more, because, you know, this is something now that, you know, as I'm listening to you, I'm, you know, I'm also getting a new insight of you and your experiences, right? So I'm already loving that. So thank you. No, but thank you seriously for sharing. You know, and in relation to that identity, I think, do you think things have gotten better in terms of society? I know that, you know, I've definitely have seen more, you know, you mentioned an artist, Mary Lambert, correct? Which I've seen and heard of. But do you think that society, you know, I know that there's now more marketing campaigns and more acceptance than certain, especially in the media, right? And, you know, what do you think about that?
I think there's definitely, things are definitely getting better. I think there's still obviously a lot of room for growth, but I'm seeing more fat women and fat men and fat people who identify as outside of the gender binary in the media. And like, I don't know how I got it, but somehow I got a Cosmopolitan magazine subscription. I didn't pay for it, it just showed up. But the first one I received, there was a fat woman on the cover, which was absolutely incredible. Like, I saw it and I was like, whoa, that's wild. But I think really a big turning point was really Lizzo. I think that was a big turning point for at least American society, was really seeing Lizzo and being fat and loving herself so wholeheartedly and showing others, you don't need to love yourself to be worthy of love. Because if you can love me, then you can love yourself too. And someone else can love you because you're worthy of love. I think that's something that's really been a big turning point. And I think from there, we've been seeing some pretty radical and pretty rapid change in really in the fat community, as well as outside of the fat community, how the fat community is perceived by other people. I still think we see a lot of, who kind of say like, it's okay to be fat if you're active and if you eat healthy and if you do all these things. And I think, again, Lizzo is really just someone who has been so at the forefront of this and is really someone who says all the time, you don't have to be active or healthy to be okay being fat. You can be lazy and fat and still be worthy of love and be worthy of existence. So I think we're still getting there to that point, but big steps have been taken very recently that are really incredible to see.
Yeah. I think that, you know, once you mentioned Lizzo, doesn't she say that right at the end of every show or something like that? She always says, if you can love me, you can love yourself or something like that.
Yeah, it's something along those lines. I'm not exactly sure what it is, but I did hear her say once, like, if you can love me, you can love yourself. So that's something that I've really been like hanging on to a little bit, especially since for so long. And I think this ties back to the gay community of, and this is not knocking RuPaul or anything like that, because I can, hear this all the time. If you don't love yourself, how are you going to love somebody else?
Right.
And I think like this really took that and like spun it on its head of, you're worthy of loving yourself if you can love someone else as well.
Right.
I think those two really do work well together, in terms of like, how do you love yourself? How do you learn to love yourself, and how do you love other people? Cause I think it's important, because I started asking myself, I have other friends who are fat and I think they're gorgeous. Mm-hmm. I love them so wholeheartedly. So why couldn't I love myself?
Right.
Even though I looked very similar to them. And once I started looking at that, it made it so clear to me that like, oh wow, this is really just something that I need to rework the way that my brain is thinking.
Wow. That's awesome. No, thank you for sharing. You know, I kind of wanted to go back a little bit. You know, you mentioned a little bit the gay community. You mentioned, you know, some other identities about yourself, right? Because I, you know, there's so much, and you mentioned how, you know, one identity of yours impacts the other, right? Or vice versa, right? And, you know, one identity for us, it doesn't define who we are entirely, right? And they are all intertwined and they impact each other, right? And I thought that was really, you know, really cool. Thing to think about. And so what is that for you? You know, right? So when we think about intersectionality, you mentioned the gay community, right? And I feel like, you know, as a member of the gay community, it's like either And I will be honest, I don't watch RuPaul that often. I know who it is and I've seen episodes and so on. And mm-hmm. I have a lot of, you know, gay friends. So it's like, oh, it's just, you know, and it's, you know, drag queens, as much as I think they're awesome and fun and RuPaul and mm-hmm. it's not the only thing of the gay community, you know,
right, yeah.
And it's like, we get put into certain boxes sometimes and I'm like, and then, you know, even within the gay community, there's different, and I don't know how you feel about this or if this works for you too, but, there's different identities, even within the gay community in terms of like, okay. how do they relate to that community and identify, you know, whether, mm-hmm. or, you know, you're more butch or more, you know, masculine or more feminine, or you're like, mm-hmm. you know, really gay or whatever that might mean. But, you know, I guess back to my point, which before I go on a tangent, yeah, you know, thinking about your identities and how have they impacted each other and what has that been for you?
Yeah, definitely. I think the identity that impacts my other identities the most is being white. Really being white does put a positive lens on almost all of my other identities, because I do have a great amount of privilege in that, a great amount of privilege that I cannot overlook, even though I could overlook and it would be easy for me to overlook and forget about. It's something that I work really hard to not forget about and continue to use that to my advantage. However, I am bi, which is a very interesting identity. Something that I kind of identified as, but didn't really get too involved in the community for a long time. Because for a while I was only dating women. So it was very, I'm bi, I guess, kind of thing. Like almost like that, that trope of like tolerating men. Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't mean to interrupt you, but do you think that there's a misconception or kind of like a negative connotation towards that term bi or being bi?
Yeah, I think it's very interesting you mention it because in the community and outside of the community, I think there are many different ways that people look at those who identify as bi. I'm very fortunate. I'm currently dating a straight heterosexual man, and he was very open and very okay with me being bi, which is awesome. But when I was dating, it was very common for people to tell me that they wouldn't date me because I'm bi, because they anticipated that I would cheat on them, or I wouldn't take things seriously, or I was confused. Specifically like when dating in the LGBTQ plus community. So when dating women or when dating lesbians, more often than not, I did receive a lot of pushback on, are you sure this is what you want? Are you sure you're not just a college student who's questioning her sexual identity and wanting to just get with a woman to see what it's like? Even though I had dated women previously for long periods of time. So I think it's really interesting. However, once I found my place and once I found my people, it was a lot easier to kind of stand my ground and really start to become part of that community and see what I could do to educate more people and talk more about what does it mean to be bi and what does it mean to be part of that community? Because it doesn't just mean confusion. It doesn't just mean that I have more options to cheat on my partner. But really that, honestly, I don't care about gender so much. Like, I really don't. It's something that exists in the world. And I've been questioning my gender on and off for the last like 10 years or so. So it's really something that just exists and I deal with it kind of way, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it definitely has. And as you said, it's outside of the community, the LGBT community, It's you know, it has its own understanding, its own what people think of it, and then even within it, right? And I mean, I think that the LGBTQ plus family and community needs to have a whole conversation, because there's so many different identities within it, and you know, I think we also just need to have a conversation about how our identities impact each other within the community, because you know, there's also, you know, negative stereotypes even within the community about each other. And it's very sad to see that, because, you know, we're supposed to be united in a way, right? We're all in the fight towards, right, equality and justice for everybody. Mm-hmm. So why can't we just, you know, focus on that, right? Get on board. No, but awesome. I you mentioned you know, not being a biggest fan of gender, so I think you know, in the time that I've known you, you work a lot with inclusive language. Yeah. And I feel like that was a really cool kind of segue to that conversation. Mm-hmm. Because inclusive language, right, involves gender.
Yep.
Right. So, you know, talk to us a little bit about that, your work with inclusive language. What is inclusive language? I think let's start there.
Yeah. Inclusive language is just language that includes everyone. Specifically, I work a lot with gender inclusive language. However, I've been starting this semester. I had one of our resident advisors reached out to me and asked me if I would, if I felt comfortable doing a training session on inclusive language as it pertains to ability status. So I've been doing a lot of research on that as well. I'm not quite where I want to be to start doing like training sessions and talking about that necessarily. But when thinking about gender inclusive language, I really just think about what language will make sure that everyone's included in the conversation, and what mm-hmm. language will ensure that everyone feels safe and comfortable in the conversation or in the space. For example, one of the things that I started with when I was an undergrad was I saw a lot of people in my institution greeting entire groups of people, like the entire first year class, anything like that, with, "Hey guys, how are you doing?" So I started a little campaign at my institution to start with my department and then work outward to try and eliminate the term "hey guys" and replace it with something more inclusive and more friendly to those who are not men. So looking at what does that look like, how do we use that, and how do we encourage those around us to also use that, and kind of how easy is it once you start? And once you have people in your life who can support you and who can help you through that. Because I can say I've been working on this for many years, and I still have times when I'll be in a staff meeting and my RA say, "Caitlin, are you using gendered language? Mm-hmm. Is that what you're doing right now?" And I'll be able to say, "Oh, yes, I am. Sorry, let's find an alternative right now." And kind of role modeling the behavior of how do you respond when someone brings up that you're using gendered language, and how do you move forward through that, is also a really important part of the conversation.
Yeah. I mean, and gender inclusive language is right. You know, just to give some examples and ideas of it. Mm-hmm. And I think when you mentioned, "Hey guys," right. You know,
yes.
You know, there's a group of people, and there's not just only guys, but we walk into a room, you know, it could be a bunch of different people, female identifying students, male identifying individuals, maybe there's trans, I don't know. There's, you know, and we're just like, "Oh, hey guys," mm-hmm. And it's not that it comes from a negative thing, right? It's not like I think where someone's using it to try to be, you know, malicious, I guess you could say. I don't think so, right? A lot of it has to do with just culture. It just has to do with mm-hmm. their upbringing. You know, maybe in the past, that's what they used.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And it's so easy to fall into it. Especially now, sometimes I find myself saying, "Hey guys," and it's something that I've never used. It's something growing up I never used or heard. So it's really interesting. But I think the important thing is that you're right. No one's coming from a place of malice. They're not coming from a place of wanting to exclude anyone. But they may not know that they could be in that conversation. And I think that's always the start of the conversation, is we're all coming from the same place of wanting to include everyone. And we all want to be safe spaces for people to come and talk to us about their experiences and how they're feeling. And one of the steps to do that is making sure that everyone's part of the conversation here.
Right. And I think, I think, what would be those first steps into starting that progress? Like, 'cause obviously I think that, one of the things is becoming aware, right. Of the language you're using and how it impacts other, but in order for you to become aware of how it impacts the other person, people need to actually express and say, hey, this is, I don't agree with that term because it doesn't make me feel included.
Yeah. I think individually, the first steps that people can take, if this is something that, if you're looking to move towards more gender inclusive language, I think the easiest first step to take is with that initial greeting. How do you greet large groups of people? So a lot of people use, hey guys, and similar gendered language. And finding words that you use regularly that are gendered. So even if you take a week and you sit down, maybe you carry a little notebook with you, or you have like your phone or your laptop and you open a notes app. And whenever you hear yourself using gendered language, you write down the word. And this isn't even trying to change the language yet. We're just noticing what words do we use most often. And then you're able to sit down at home when you have the mental capacity and you're in the space to try and find alternatives. So for me, my alternative for hey guys is hey friends. I use it quite a lot. It's something that not only provides a safe space, but it really does makes people feel safe with me and feel like they can come and talk to me. However, people could also use hey all, hey everyone, good morning. Honestly, you don't even need to say hey guys, you could just say hello, how are you?
Right.
So I think finding those alternatives before trying to utilize the alternatives is extremely important. That way, if someone does say, hey, you're using gendered language, you already have an alternative. You don't really need to think too much about it. I think the second step is recruiting a friend or a family member or someone that you trust to help you point out when you've used this language. I had a coworker who I asked, whenever you hear me use gendered language, can you just point it out to me? Can you just say, and I came up with like even a code phrase. It's like, can you just say like Caitlin in that tone? That way they're not saying it in front of like a group of people. That way they're not saying, Caitlin, you use gendered language again. But I know what they're talking about. So I'm able to then backtrack and say, I actually said, ladies and gentlemen, when I should have just said distinguished guests. So I apologize for that, but I'm going to move forward now. That's always something that feels a little awkward in the moment. So I think those are two really good steps to start the process. And always reaching out to people around you and checking in with them to see, how do you feel about gendered language? And how do you feel about gender neutral language? Because there are plenty of people who do not like people using gender neutral language to describe them. So I think that's also good to check in with those around you to see how they're feeling about it.
Right. Absolutely. You mentioned something that that interests me, because I love languages. As a Spanish major, and it's my first language, but I've taken French, Japanese, and I've always loved languages. I think it's such an important element of our culture and our identity. And you mentioned how some people think that you're trying to change the language, and it's not that you're trying to change the language itself. Like, it's not like you're trying to change the structure or the English language. It's right? It's just changing certain, you know, instead of using a certain word, use a different word that doesn't necessarily have a gender in terms of, right, gender aspect of it, I guess you could say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And I think what's important, and this is something that I have a conversation a lot with many people. I was an English major in undergrad. The singular they is something that has been used for so long. It has been used since Middle English. It's something that has been part of our culture and part of the English language for a very long time. And I frequently hear people say, well, using the singular they doesn't fit in my agenda, or I don't want to use it because it's grammatically incorrect, which is just untrue. And just in basic grammar in English, it's completely untrue. Think of when we are, let's say, like you're at the grocery store and you hear over the intercom, someone left their wallet in the parking lot. If this is your wallet, please come to the front and collect it. When we don't know the person, we automatically use the singular they. Right. So I think it's using that and saying, we've already been doing this. It is something we are capable of doing. We just have to make the decision on if we are going to do it for the benefit of others as well as the benefit of ourselves.
Right, absolutely. You know, it's not that, you know, it is difficult in a sense of like, especially when people are just, you know, it's part of our culture. It's just ingrained in us, and it takes work. And like you said, it takes recognizing, and I think it takes, you know, the courage to just ask others, you know, how did you feel, or have others express how they felt about what you just said and how you said it, what word you used. And like you said, having someone who is your buddy that can say, hey, you know, that was not, shouldn't have said that, or they identify as, you know, so-and-so. I've had that happen. I mean, even some students have corrected me and say, oh, by the way, so-and-so identifies as this. And I would go, oh, that's right. I'm so sorry. Because it just happens. We're human beings.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And it is so hard. It is really difficult to start that process. Mm. And I think acknowledging that difficulty is important, because a lot of times when people have these conversations, they've already done a lot of the work to get themselves there. I still slip up, honestly, probably more frequently than I would like to say. As someone for a long time who has been okay with both she, her, hers pronouns and they, them, theirs pronouns, I oftentimes misgender people. And those next steps are really important to the conversation. And I think normalizing, making mistakes and correcting those mistakes is really important. And I think it's something that, at least what I've seen as part of American culture, is you don't make mistakes. And if you don't make mistakes, you're good. And if you do make mistakes, you're bad. But that good, bad binary is so dangerous, because everyone exists in the gray when it comes to when it comes to the good, bad binary. No one is inherently 100% good, and no one is inherently 100% bad. So being able to have those conversations and continue with them and acknowledge when you've made a mistake is difficult, and it's hard to move forward from that sometimes. But again, I think it starts with self-reflection, and I think it starts with creating a plan. What do you do when you make this mistake? How do you move forward? What are the words you say? Because when you already have it set up and you already have it ready to go, it just makes it that much easier. Like almost like you're reciting from a monologue, or reciting from something that you already know deep in your heart.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and thinking about, you know, inclusive language. And I know we've kind of been pretty much been saying it throughout our conversation in terms of what it does, right? But you know, I kind of really wanted to, you know, just kind of focus a little bit more on that. You know, what does it do for a person, right? I know we talked a little bit about in terms of like obviously including others, making them feel included, but really, honestly, like what does it do for a person, and how impactful is it for us to consider that person's identity and say, okay, you know, this person identifies as this pronoun or whatever, and I should use the inclusive language, you know? And I think you mentioned a little bit about you're doing work now on inclusive language for accessibility, correct?
Correct.
And that's the difference between using disability or disabled to having a person saying, oh no, they just have an accessibility right issue.
Yes.
How powerful is that?
It is so powerful. It can really change an entire person's outlook. I think when we look at gender inclusive language, after conversations with those who identify outside of the gender binary, and being someone who for a while identified outside of the gender binary, hearing someone purposefully and meaningfully use gender inclusive language meant that that was someone that I could talk to. It was someone who I could be safe with, and it was someone who I knew wouldn't hurt me on purpose. They wouldn't choose language just because they knew it would hurt me, and they wouldn't purposefully exclude me from conversations. I knew that they would be someone who, when I had a large concern and I needed to talk to, I could. As a student, I had many people who did not respect my gender identity, and some of those people were in departments that I had to go to for support when I was an undergrad, and I couldn't trust them, so I didn't go to them. So I figured it out on my own instead of going for help. And this is something that is honestly something, honestly, looking back, they weren't malicious. I knew that, but after being constantly misgendered, it was hard to see that. And it was hard to see they care about me, even if they won't correct this language of theirs. Mm. And I think even an effort makes a huge difference, even if you're not 100% successful. I noticed the people who used the wrong pronouns and then immediately went back and went, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. I meant they, them. I meant to say they. Even that means so much to someone in conversation to really show, like, you know, you understand, and you respect this identity. And I think for when we talk about ability status, I think that's also super important, because when we start with person first language and we start looking at someone as a whole human rather than just their disability or just their ability status, it's so absolutely important. I can't even tell you how many times I am physically impaired. I have chronic pain and nerve damage in both of my legs. So stairs are extremely difficult for me. And I know that it's not as physically, like, you can't see it. So when people know, I can see the change, and I see when they don't understand, I can see that. Well, you can walk. You're not in a wheelchair, so I don't understand how this is an impact for you. And I think starting those conversations is important, because there's so many invisible ability levels, and there's so many visible ability levels that people don't understand, or people don't quite pay attention to, or the opposite. That's all they pay attention to. So they see someone who may not have, maybe they are in a wheelchair and they think they can't do anything.
Right.
So having those conversations is so important. That way we can start treating people as people rather than their ability levels.
Right. Absolutely. You know, not one thing defines who we are.
Exactly. Right? Just like you said at the beginning, Mm-hmm. Not one identity defines who we are.
Yeah. So I do know that we are coming up to the end of our time, and mm-hmm. I wanted to offer you an opportunity to, you know, what should those listening in should really take away from this?
I hope that something people can take away from this is that it's okay to make mistakes, and it's okay to acknowledge those mistakes, especially when you're around others, when it may be most difficult. But it's also okay if you don't recognize those mistakes in the moment in front of everyone, and if you go home and then recognize the mistake. As long as you're recognizing it and you're reflecting on it and you're thinking about what you can do in the future, and you're making the people impacted aware that you know of the mistake and what you're doing to move forward. Everyone makes mistakes. And I think when we start to become okay with those mistakes, we can start to move forward to a place where we're not making them as frequently.
Absolutely. We live when we learn. We're human.
Exactly.
You know, the key is, what do you do with that information that you just learned?
Definitely. You know?
Mm-hmm. Well, again, I want to thank you so much. I thought this was a fantastic conversation, and there's so much more to unpack from this conversation that I wish that we had a lot more time. But who knows, maybe, you know, we'll come back and do an episode on, you know, one of these and expand it even a little bit more.
Mm-hmm. Maybe that would be awesome. I loved this conversation, Andres. Thank you so much for having me. I'm very excited for future conversations that we have.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And we'll see each other soon.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
All right.
Stay safe.
You too.
All right. So that concludes our episode. Again, thank you. Thank you so much for tuning in to the Being Yourself podcast. And if you're wondering when is the next episode coming out or what's going on with the podcast, make sure you follow the Facebook page at facebook.com/beingyourself. You may also find us on Instagram at being.yourself. And again, thank you, and until next time.